Another way is with awards. Giving people awards improves their self-esteem, their self-image, and is a big prestige motivator. Awards could be as simple as a trophy, a plaque on the wall. It could be a trip. It could be a check. It could come in a million different ways. But giving people awards will really help to bolster their motivation by building their prestige. The next motivator is security. Security is real important to some people. Entrepreneurs, usually not at all. It's the least of all motivators. But for some people, man, just knowing they got a job or they've got secure income, they don't have to worry, they don't want to take risks. If you've got people like that, you need to build on that feeling of security for them to keep them motivated, keep them inspired. Start talking career path with them. In other words, don't just talk your job, because everybody replaces one job with another job. You need to be talking career path. That says long term. Where do you want to be in 5 years, 10 years? What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? How do you want to grow here? See, by doing this, we tend to feed this need for security. Talk to them about the company's stability and how secure the company is. That gives them also a feeling of stability. Whenever you talk to your people that have this need for security, talk five-year plans. See, when you're talking long-term, they feel secure. They just relax and they hunker in and do their job. When they're not sure and everything is a bit tenuous, that's usually when they get so nervous they start to focus on the problems as opposed to on the fact that they've got an important job to do. Next motivator is altruism or charity. Now, this might seem a bit odd to be able to use here, but believe me, it works for those that charity is the most important thing in their lives. I know a lot of workers that work long hours only to take the time off at the end of the day and go and volunteer at the hospital or volunteer for the cancer fund or volunteer for the blood drive or something else. You see, those people that have a high need for charity, for altruism, they have to do something for other people. It's inside of them. So if you get some workers like that, take advantage of it. Let them be the one in charge of going raising money for the company charity. Let them interface with the charity and deliver the check and all the rest of that. Don't take the glory yourself. Let them do it. For them, in their own lives, they may only be able to raise a couple hundred dollars for a charity, and they wish they could do more. When they can go and collect it company-wide and deliver a check for $20,000, $50,000, or whatever, that may make them feel very, very special. So think before you do things. If someone has a high need for charity, allow them to be able to do charitable work at work. Challenge is another major motivator. People want challenge. Whenever I survey companies, it always comes out that challenge is the number one thing that they want. Although we've already said self-esteem is the number one problem. But they want challenge. No one, however, wants more work. They want the challenge. In other words, they want something new, something different, something that will help to draw them out and make them feel special. A number of ways of working on this challenge would include giving them training and training options, allowing them to learn something new, even if it's not directly related to their job. Sometimes doing something totally different makes a major difference. For example, I've been working on a deck in my backyard, and in working in this deck, digging holes and pounding nails and screwing in decking boards and sawing and all the rest of this, it maybe is not the most productive use of my time, but it was entirely productive because it gave me a challenge. It took me away from the computer and away from the speaking and away from all the rest of the stuff. And all of a sudden, it's more fun to get back to the computer. I'm saying, man, I'm glad I'm not a construction worker. I admire them so much more having done this. You ought to see the blisters on my hands now. But, you know, by doing that, it gave me a challenge in another area of my life that makes me more productive on my job, more energy in what I'm doing as a speaker and a trainer and a consultant. Other things that you can do is cross-training within your workers, allowing them to learn someone else's job. Now, if you say you will do this, they feel ordered and they resent it. On the other hand, if it's presented, hey, how would you like to have the opportunity to learn some other jobs, some other tasks here, which would make you ultimately more valuable to the company? They go, well, okay, let me try this. And so if it's presented the right way, cross-training or learning new jobs entirely, having them maybe even create new jobs, will really develop these people that have a high need for challenge. The last two motivators, sometimes people tell me should be the first, but I got to tell you, I left them to the last for a particular reason. Second to the last is money. Money is the one motivator everybody tells me is the most important. When you ask your workers, what would motivate you? They all say, oh, give me more money. You give me more money and I'll be happy, productive. Funny thing is, I work a lot with the insurance industry, and these people are on straight commission. They can make unlimited amounts of money, but they don't. You know when they're really busy is December or November, when the close of their year comes. Now, is it that all of you out there said, I want to go and buy more insurance in November, December? No. What happens is it's closing time for their awards, their contests, and they all want to make their contests. They want to be winners. And so money isn't the motivator itself. It's what we do with that money. Now, money has acquired a valence all its own. In other words, it's acquired power on its own by being paired so much with the rewards that money does buy. So that's what I like to focus on now, is how to stretch your money, stretch your budget in order to make it a productive motivator as opposed to just giving them the money. See, if you give them the money, that'll disappear into their regular budget, and you find pretty soon the motivation value is gone, is dissipated. So here's a couple of thoughts. Give them tickets that you purchase to movies, to plays, to operas, to whatever they enjoy doing. If you can go and negotiate with the theaters, you find that you could probably buy those tickets for 50 cents and a dollar. And by buying them at half price, you give them a $20 ticket to a play or something, then that has a $20 value in their mind, but it only cost you 10. You've now doubled your budget to motivate with money. Same thing with terms of restaurants, getting coupons, going to a local restaurant, maybe one that everybody goes to for lunch or maybe a special one for dinners, and saying, look, if I give you $500 now up front, will you sell me $1,000 worth of coupons? In other words, again, buying it 50% off, so that the perceived value when you give it to people is, hey, this is a $10 chit or this is a $20 coupon, but it only costs you 5 or 10 respectively. Same thing with U.S. government savings bonds or your local government savings bonds. If you give someone a $50 bond, the perception is I got a $50 gift, but it only costs you $25. Last thought on money is salary is not so much of a motivator because it's a fixed reinforcement schedule. Psychology has taught us that variable reinforcement schedules produce greater bonds and produce more productivity. Set salaries come every week, every 2 weeks, every month, and they lose their value because they're predictable. If you go to a casino and you play one of those one-armed bandits, one of those slot machines, you pull the arm, it's not every third pull or every fourth pull or fifth pull. You never know when you're going to win. It's not the fourth pull that's going to pay the big jackpot. You don't know. And because you don't know, you keep thinking it's got to be the next one. You might get a little bit now, but, oh, the next one's going to be the big one, and you keep putting your money back in. And that's why people that do win a fair amount of money typically lose it all again, because they think, hey, if I won this much, the next time it'll be even more. And so when you give rewards, don't make it a regular thing. Don't start on incentive programs that are forever programs. Instead, give them something periodically, a short contest or a short award to work for just this week, just this month, trying to keep them shorter than 3 months total as far as contest periods, and make it changed on a regular basis. Make it different all the time so it's not the same. Variable reinforcement will stretch your money, stretch the value, and stretch the productivity in your workers. The last one is the basic human needs, and hey, if they're not having their basic human needs met, you're going to find that nothing you say or do is going to be as much of a motivator as more money. And before you consider what you're paying people as being too much, I'd like you to consider what turnover costs you. If you go and hire even a frontline, basic entry-level kind of worker, it's going to cost you at least $2,000. Say, Mike, it doesn't cost that much for the ad. Hey, by the time you get through a training, setting up a file, the government forms, all the rest of this, your time associated with it, minimum of $2,000. What if you put that $2,000 into their salary? How many people would be leaving versus staying? You probably find you would retain your workforce and not have to keep training on the beginning stuff. You could get into some more in-depth, serious, complicated trainings that you've been wanting to do, but nobody stays long enough to allow you to. You also find that you'll be less frustrated, you'll be more relaxed and a smarter leader as a result. The last step I wanted to cover with you today is the idea of isolating bad apples. That everybody's got some worker or somebody on their team that just doesn't seem to fit in. Now, they may be fantastic people, and if you could change them, that's the ideal. But generally, you can't do that. If you want to try, maybe go to your team members that are the good ones and say, hey, would you help this person with this problem? I don't want to have to fire them. You'll have to check with your legal department to make sure this is appropriate in your situation and it's handled the right way. But if you go to them and maybe say, look, I don't want to fire this person because they're gossiping. Would you just do me a favor? Don't listen to it. Change whatever. And maybe you can change these people, but generally, you can't. Again, they may be great people, just not in your department. So here's some other options. Consider going and trading them with another department, another manager, and saying, look, I've got this one worker that I'm having trouble with. Do you have someone you might want to give me you're having trouble with, and we'll swap and see if we can make a change. Don't keep passing this person throughout a company and let them infect everybody's minds. But pass them once and make it very clear this is a one and only chance for them to stay there, to stay with the company, stay with your organization. Now, if you can't, they don't change, here's what you got to do. Number one, I love this one because I hate firing people, is put them on probation. Give them a 30, 60, 90-day probation and say, look, we've talked about this, we've tried, I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. If this happens just even one time, not five, not four, not three, not two, but even one time more, don't even bother coming back. It's your decision. Now, if it happens in a 30-day period, they know they've already fired themselves in essence. So again, if union situations, whatever, you have to get permission to do this. But you generally, by talking about it with the union leaders, can get them to agree to it if it makes sense for them and their team. They get something out of it. But consider probation. You may want to also consider physical isolation for certain individuals. One of the publishers I work with had this absolute genius of a credit manager who had less than one half of 1% bad debt collection. I mean, it's unheard of in the publishing industry for advertising. He was able to collect debts from everybody. Well, he also had a bad temper, and he would swear using every foul word in the book at the salespeople that would sell orders that he couldn't collect. So what they did was, instead of firing him, put him in the opposite end of the building in the sales department, gave him his own little cubicle or office where nobody else would go in there, and said, you are not allowed to talk to salespeople. You can only talk to the sales manager. And the sales manager is strong enough where he could tell him to take a flying hike if he wanted to. And it made sense. It made sense for that situation, isolating them. You don't want to get rid of someone who's literally making you millions of dollars. At the same time, you can't let that person's attitude or behavior drag everybody else down. Finally, go ahead and fire them. If they're not working out, you're doing them a service as well as the entire team and doing a service for yourself. Get rid of them. One of the greatest tools of a leader, one of the greatest tools of management. These four elements are key for a smart leader to make yourself more productive. Now, if you're thinking, Mike, this is not all brand new, you're right. Actually, smart leaders have been using these steps for 2,500 years. I'd like to close this side of the tape off by quoting to you Lao Tzu from 2,500 years ago, who said, a leader is best when people barely know he exists. Not so good when people obey him and acclaim him. Worse when they despise him. Fail to honor people, and they fail to honor you. But of a good leader, who talks little, when his work is done, his aim fulfilled, they will all say, we did this ourselves. That is the mark of a smart leader.